Welcome to episode 37 of the Never Iron Anything podcast, an occasional chat with a comics fan about a comic, a series, or creator that they personally dig. This week I have a returning guest. He's a comics fan, a comics podcaster, and a comics editor. It's a returning guest, Mr. Tom Stewart. Hello, Tom.
Good evening. How are you?
Good, thanks, man. How's it going? We've been chatting for 10 minutes, chewing the cud. It's going all right?
Yeah, it's all good, man. For the peanut gallery at home, yes, it is good. It is very good. Yes, very tired, very hot, very sweaty, but not bad.
But made all the better by I'm north of the border in a week's time, so that's going to be exciting. Yes, good. Looking forward to that. I must give Dave a bell actually. See if he's about.
Yeah, actually, yeah, I've not chased him up about that either. Actually, he should be. He's not off gallivanting anywhere, so
he's
should
out
be
clubbing
fine.
Or something. Yeah, good. Now, I'm going to announce the name of the comic we've chosen today. So it's Buffy the Vampire Slayer, issue 51. Is that right?
Yeah, that's spot on, mate. Yep.
It's not. Yeah. It's not for listeners. We don't believe in reading pornography.
You may not.
Do you want to tell the listeners what we've chosen, what you've chosen?
Yes, I have chosen issue number 3 of Batman and the Outsiders, and it's Bitter Orange with Agent Orange.
Oh, okay. So this is a good one. And this is a nice little... This is not going to be a long one, I don't think, a long episode, is it? Because it's a nice one-and-done DC comic. So we're talking the Batman and the Outsiders series that ran from 1983 to 1987. Mm-hmm. And it ran in from Brave and Bold 200, where there was a story in Brave and Bold 200, I think, wasn't there? Is that right?
Yeah, there was, yeah.
So you've made it a bit of a... Is it a bit of a... a job you've decided, a bit of a challenge to read Batman the Outsiders. How did you come to this, dude?
Well, Nando had been telling me for ages that I should clock on to Batman and the Outsiders. I mean, me and him are sort of we pass sort of Batman comics between each other sometimes, and he'll give me a list of recommended ones that he's read over the years, and I sort of go back and rectify history and read all the old back issues and whatnot.
Because I'm guessing this is from before you were born. Is that right?
Yeah. I was 1889, so yeah.
Oh, well,
yeah.
Okay, yeah, well before. Yeah.
But I took part in the old Zavi deal. So many for so much. I actually dipped in it a couple of times, so I've got...
It's back on again now, isn't it?
It is.
It's a lot of like volume 2s and stuff, but it's still worth having, isn't it?
Yeah, although New Frontier 1 and 2 are there, so people should jump on it.
I wish they'd do a 2000 AD one, because they're like hen's teeth to come across them.
Yeah, I know. I keep seeing it. It's always DC, and I keep seeing it going, come on, stick something else up there. Yeah, go for it. Yeah. Anything, Image, Dark Horse, something. Just shove something else up.
Oh, that'd be good. Yeah.
But yeah, I jumped on that. I've got about 30 odd of them sitting now, but I started with Batman and the Outsiders, and I kid you not, I've actually read this one a couple of times through now.
Nice.
I think the Eagle Moss collection comprises of the first 5 issues, but issue 3, my God, what an issue.
Yeah, it's a lovely little issue, isn't it? And it happens... we'll talk about it in a second. So let's hold our sand on that for a second. So
yes.
Just a couple of things I wanted to mention quickly before we get into it. So it's written and co-created by Mike W. Barr. More about him in a second. Drawn and by the co-creator Jim Aparo. Colorist, yes. Adrian Roy. Editor, the mighty Len Wein. I was only talking about Len Wein the other day. Now, if you haven't, we'll be talking about Mike W. Barr in this episode, but if you want to hear a bit more about Jim Aparo, a bit more about his history and stuff, go back to episode 6, which I did with Damien, and we talked about A Death in the Family, and we dig a bit more into Jim's background there. I'm sure we will talk about the art, because you can't not but talk about it. But so this is what happened was, I watched a YouTube video with Mike W. Barr today at the Magic City Comic Con, and Mike does not suffer fools. I've got to be honest with you. He's got that sort of look in his face where you can see that, you can hear the nervousness in the people in the audience asking him a question. I kind of admire that. And they were saying, you know, how did it come about? And what happened was, this is his explanation. Whether this is true or not, you know, sometimes when it's sort of 35 years old, creators don't always get it right. But he said that there was. I think he says Brazil. Now, Brazil ran a monthly comic, and in that monthly or weekly comic was all of Detective Comics, Batman, World's Finest, and The Brave and the Bold, which were the 4 Batman titles at the time. Mm-hmm. And DC decided they were going to close The Brave and Bold down for sales reasons, apparently.
Yep.
And they wanted a 4th title so that could fill this comic in Brazil. That was his explanation. So he was given, they said, what do you want to do? And he came up with this with Jim Aparo. And there was, is it like an insert in the 200th issue? I can't remember off the top of my head now. Is that right?
Yeah, it is. Actually, in this collection, it's actually just like a random couple of pages at the start.
Right, okay.
But yeah, it was. I think it was just an insert because it was just put in as like a preview leading up to it. But yeah.
Yeah, okay.
A bit odd.
Yeah, so and they did that a bit, didn't they? They did it with Teen Titans and a couple of other things where you get like a little story somewhere in the back of a comic and it would lead. I think Warlord started like that. There's a few that started like that, I think. And it was a kind of a comics tradition. Grimjack started like that. Yeah, there's all these sort of things going on. But so this story is called Bitter Orange. Now, that sounded a bit, I don't know why. Maybe because I'm a man of late 80s drinking cabinets, you know.
Yeah.
That Bitter Lemon and Bitter Orange, it just made me, that's a bit of a weird title. I don't know why. It just, somehow.
To be fair, I don't know why they didn't just call it Agent Orange.
Yeah.
It was a bit strange to have it called Bitter Orange, but it goes well with the kind of the starting little dialogue box that they've got at the top of it, I guess. But they could have just called it Agent Orange, to be fair. Agent Orange himself only makes like 3 appearances in DC overall, so I think they could have just got away with calling it Agent Orange.
It's a funny one, isn't it? Because there is that, and we'll talk about it in a minute, there's a reach back to Vietnam and the men who came back from Vietnam.
Yeah.
And I was trying to think about this. I'm thinking, oh, Vietnam must be ages ago. But when you look at the date of this comic, and probably when it was written in 82 or 83, it was only sort of 10 or so years before that,
you know,
it ended. When you think, for us, that would be like 2010. It was nothing, really. Yeah.
I quite appreciated the fact of that as well, that it's so current and in the sort of mainstream DC book as well to cover something that's so highly fraught, especially still to this day kind of in America. It's a fraught topic, but to do it like only so many short years after the fact as well.
Yeah.
It seemed a very bold choice to make.
Around this time we had Platoon and Hamburger Hill and these sort of movies slightly after this were coming out, weren't they? It was a time for people to remember the sort of horrors of that war. And that plays on this in a slightly cynical way, doesn't it? We discover.
Yeah.
Okay, so should we start with the cover? Because we don't really talk about covers enough on this show, and I think we should. What was your thoughts on the cover? Have you got anything you'd...
I quite like the kind of haunting.
Yeah.
So Agent Orange is just like an outline orange with Batman and the Outsiders like bang dead in the center.
Yeah.
I thought it was really nice, and it gave the sort of gas effect of what Agent Orange is using on them and stuff from the cover. I think it was a really lovely cover, but the color scheme of it, it's a bit kind of muted.
It's a bit drab, isn't it?
Yeah,
I think so. But I get what you mean. I actually, because I read this when it was coming out, and I actually got the impression this was a story about a ghost by looking at the cover. I remember thinking, oh, it's about a ghost who's a soldier from Vietnam or something like that, you know?
Do you know what? If you went even just on the inside, the sort of the starting bit where it says Bitter Orange as well, you'd kind of get that vibe as well, because he's almost like a giant in the inside of there as well, so you would think it would be like them fighting a ghost of some sort, and couldn't be further from it.
He's essentially a con man, isn't he? Amongst a lot of other stuff that happens in this book, he's something like that. Now that's interesting to say. So for those that don't know, the cover is bluey gray in the most part, with this etched in almost orange figure outline drawn, and to counterpoint that you've got the bright yellow of the boxes and the title, which is interesting.
It's quite a shocking, almost like ink blue purple around the outside as well, which is a bit, it offsets the sort of ghostly orange and stands that apart, but
it's a strange one, isn't it?
Yeah. It doesn't really do anything, to be fair. If you look at all the rest of the Batman and the Outsider covers, it's not the best cover.
Yeah,
out of all of them.
Yeah, I agree. Funny enough, Barr was talking a bit about Batman the Outsider covers at one point, and he liked a striking single image. He said some of the covers he asked the designers, whether they, I think it was Bob Brozakis, I think his name is, or someone like that. He was saying, right. can you strip back all the, he wanted to take the price off it. He wanted the names of the creators off it. He wanted everything off it. And the one thing he said they wouldn't remove was the Comics Code box. He said, can you just take it off? And I just want this sort of single striking image. So surprisingly, for a book that came out of just a kind of fun team-up book, it had more of a sort of eye to it, I think.
Yeah.
And it was something of a minor hit at the time, or maybe even a bigger hit than that. It was popular, I think. Mm-hmm. Now, to lay the field out, this comes straight off the back of a two-parter, doesn't it? Is it Markovia, I believe?
Yes. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
The first two issues, yeah, to introduce Geoforce. Brian Markov.
Markov, yeah. Like, a bit like Harry Marcos, I'm going to say. I'm going to confuse you with that.
I wanted to say it's Brion as opposed to Brian, because yes, it sounds better for a start, but also the fact that it would just be Brian Markov just doesn't sound right.
And
sounds like somebody you meet down your local shop.
Brion.
You
know what I mean? Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
Yeah, Brion.
Yeah. And it's kind of like a get the team together kind of thing, isn't it? But sort of complicated with the king of Markovia dies and Brion's brother takes over and he's Geoforce, and there's a sort of kind of a Doctor Doom-esque villain, isn't there, who makes a reappearance later on as well.
Yeah,
there's a bit of that going on.
It was very much a sort of royalty usurper sort of thing. Very, do you know what, in some cases very similar to some of the stuff that happens in the first series or so of for all the kids out there, Game of Thrones or whatever.
Yeah.
It is very much like that, of somebody very close trying to take the power and somebody that's grew up there and whatnot. And
yeah,
it did kind of come from that. It's a strange lead-in, but it very much sets up the issue well to have him leave and say who he's going off with.
Yes. So that's what we get. So I was going to say Prisoner's Ender by that. That's what I meant to say as well. So just quickly before we get into that opening, so we won't go through every page, but there's a couple of there. Bruce Wayne gets a bit sleazy. Prepare yourselves.
Yeah, he does.
There's you didn't see this so much. I think this was a kind of a disappearing tactic in comics at the time, but I was looking through some Challenges of the Unknown and some other issues the other day, and they have this kind of movie poster opening page in it, don't they? It's like a second cover almost.
Yeah, I think they had it in Swamp Thing quite a bit as well.
Right. Okay. Yeah, where it isn't part of the story, and it doesn't replicate any part of the story. So page one is all the team, lovely action shot of them fighting a giant Agent Orange, who we all know is not giant.
No,
it's a strange one, isn't it? It's strange that I didn't quite get my head around that, but it's nice. I'd like the original of it, but you know.
Yeah, it's odd as well, because none of them really ever, I don't think all of them together come in contact with them at any point when I think about it throughout this issue.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I think they all come in individually, or maybe one or two of them come in contact with them, but not all of them. And yet this cover shows them all fighting him like he's some sort of giant King Kong type thing over the top of a silhouetted city.
Yeah.
It's like he's never even really in the city, to be fair, either.
Yeah. Should we run down the characters in Batman and the Outsiders, later to be the Outsiders? I think it's back being Batman and the Outsiders at the moment, and I think it's just been cancelled, sadly. So let's avoid Batman. We've talked about him enough on this show. So you've got Black Lightning, Jefferson Pierce, first appearance in his own title in 1977, which ran for 11 issues. I'm going to say one of the first times I've ever completely bought a run of a comic, because it was only 11 issues.
Really?
Yeah. I remember I got a couple of odd issues as it came out, and then I bought the rest of the Comic Mart.
This Eagle Moss collection that I've got, actually, you know, they always come with a classic issue at the end.
Oh, okay.
And it actually comes with Black Lightning number one.
Oh, nice. Oh, that's great. Yeah. That's good. I kind of like him. I liked him as a kid because I liked the way his hair was part of his costume.
Yes.
He puts like his mask and his wig. Part and parcel, they're the same thing. So he was created by Tony Isabella and Trevor Von Eden. Trevor Von Eden's a great artist, love his stuff. Mm-hmm. And Tony Isabella, I think Tony Isabella had something to do with Marvel UK for a while, actually, as well. I think he helped out there.
Right.
So he's quite a good character, probably the most well known, I'm going to say, because of the TV series and his appearances in comics and stuff. I think he's had his own little mini series here and there. Good character, like him. And it just seems to sort of throw snowballs that are made of lightning bolts in this. It tends to be.
certainly seems like it.
And then we've got Geo-Force, Breon Markov, as we said. He's gravity manipulation. He's the Prince of Markovia, first appearance as Brave and the Bold 200. He's a pretty much a new character for this. This is his fourth issue. It always struck me as him and Halo kind of were next level, could be in the Justice League, weren't really street level enough. Maybe, I don't know.
I would definitely agree with that. They were the ones that had sort of actual shooting powers and flying and a slight invulnerability of some sort, a wee bit of super strength and Geo-Force. I mean, he manages to grab helicopter blades at one point.
He does,
You know, it's I think you're right on that one, definitely. And compared to the rest of them,
definitely. Then we've got Katana, Yamashiro Tatsu, first appearance again, Brave and Bold 200. Now, as I understand it, listening to that interview again with Mike Barr, he was saying that he's very pleased he created her because she appears in everything, and he actually gets a little bit of a residual out of it.
That's good.
Yeah, she's in Suicide Squad. She's in some of the cartoons. She's in Arrow, I think. She makes an appearance.
Yeah, she is, actually. Yeah.
So I think that was quite wise. The character is never the same as in this, but I think the real note is I quite warm to her, actually. She's the sort of, if you had a group, you know, the old thing with American TV series and comic books is you create a family environment. So the Uncanny X-Men were essentially parents and kids and a cousin, you know. And this is, if I had to do it with this team, I would probably say her and Batman were kind of the parents of the team, weren't they, you know?
Yes. Yeah, very much so. They're very similar to, in a way, Batman and Martian Manhunter in the GLI sort of series as well. Yeah. Very similar. Very, very similar.
Cool.
Except I think Batman plays more of the Martian Manhunter role in that case.
Okay, yeah, I get you. Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, it's strange, this one with Batman. We're so stuck in our ways with Batman these days. Well, we need to sort of be prepared to have this slightly wackadoodle kind of character occasionally. And he goes from being brash to dangerous to fun to, you know, in Batman and the Outsiders. So then we got Metamorpho, Rex Mason. His first appearance was in Brave and Bold as well, but it was in issue 57, created by Bob Heaney and Ramona Fredon. Always struck me as a sort of slightly tragic character, sort of hiding his tragic with his sense of humour, maybe, you know.
Yeah, definitely. He's not one that I've had a lot of experience with, but it is that thing. He's constantly putting on some sort of comedy front.
Yeah.
All the time, but it's always the fact that he's having to cover up his sort of, well, as he says, he's like disformed features and whatnot, and he's sort of having to cover up his face all the time. So yeah, it's almost like a Phantom of the Opera type tragedy type thing, covered, laced with absolute bucket loads of comedy.
Yeah, he's almost the one that you wonder why there was no long running, you know, really well thought of Vertigo series about him. You know, he's the sort of person that Pete Milligan or Neil Gaiman or someone would have got hold of and created this whole universe around.
Yeah.
And then Halo, Gabby Doe, as she's named in this.
Gabby.
I didn't get that.
No, I didn't understand that. I think that's so that they could get away with almost saying baby.
Right, I get you. Yeah, that sounds about right.
It seems like it anyway, because there's a bit later on when he's sort of going, oh, hold it, Gaby. And
let's skip to her, because she's the sort of B story in this, isn't she, really?
She is.
So we start off with a bit of, there's a burglary, then we go to Markovia, then they all fly to Wayne Manor, they all get a house, and then Batman takes Halo shopping. Or Bruce Wayne does. No, he takes to the doctor, doesn't he, first, to get her examined.
Yeah.
And the doctor says, this is slightly dodgy, the doctor says something like, I'd put her between 15 and 17 years old, I'd say. And he says, well, split the difference at 16, Douglas. That's what Bruce Wayne, right, where are we going with this? And then he takes her shopping, and they sort of come upon this name for her. And then he kisses her on the hand.
And she gets all flustered.
And then he buys her a flat.
Yeah, it's. Do you know what? Bruce Wayne does not. The actual Bruce Wayne, not Batman, comes over really creepy in that car.
He does,
Because
doesn't he?
when he kisses her on the hand, you know, it's the welcome to Gotham City, Miss Gabrielle Doe. But the way he's doing it, it's like he's speaking to Vicky Vale or something. I'm sitting going, oh God, mate, come on. You've just said split the difference 16.
He
You
could
know
be
what I mean?
15. Let's face it. What is going on here?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a
Oh
strange one, isn't
God.
it? It's yeah, I can see Twitter not liking that. Oh, that's all I'm gonna say.
Yeah,
The and
definitely.
then they go
But do you
shopping.
notice
Sorry, man.
she's also going through a book of 10,000 names? Like, what the fuck? I just loved it. Like, it's so ridiculous. Like, you know, oh, I've got to pick a name. Well, here's a book of 1,000 names that looks like a pamphlet, to
It
be
does,
fair.
yeah.
But they pick Gabriel, and I'm assuming that's just to match up with the fact that she's called Halo.
Yeah,
I'm assuming
yeah, I'm
so. And
guessing.
then, but you know, the fact, oh, you know, then you would be called Gabby. She's like, oh no, it might be Gaby. What?
Yeah, that makes
Who
no sense.
ever said
Yeah,
Gaby?
Mike had been at
Oh.
the drinks cabinet, hadn't he, when he wrote this one, I think. Yeah,
Yeah.
as much as I love his stuff, yeah. I mean, he absolutely loves Batman. I've seen him on two. I watched two panels with him on today, and both of them he said, "Look, I love Batman." He says, "Just love him. I love Batman." That's all he'd say.
It really comes across. Really comes across.
So they go shopping. Then they end up. Then we get a little conversation between Katana and Batman, and then they all end up in their sort of special flat, which is also the Outsiders' headquarters.
Yes.
It's a fairly simple storyline, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's nothing. There's no real tech. Batman does his usual, right? He creates a team, and he goes, "Right, I'm going to go and sort this on my own."
Yeah. You all need to train, but it's good that I've got you all here as backup. Bye-bye. And he's away, you know.
Let's talk a little bit about Mike Barr. So, born 30th of May 1952 in Akron, Ohio. As I said, he loved Batman as a kid. His first published story was in Detective Comics 444, which is an 8-page elongated man backup story. And then he did in the 1980s. He did Mystery in Space, Green Lantern, Brave and Bold, Marvel Team Up, Outsiders. Worked in DC editorial as well. I think he edited his own book, which he was writing for a short amount of time as well. And then he's probably most famous, I think, for amongst the UK crowd anyway, for writing Camelot 3000, which Brian Bolland drew, which I think was DC's first direct market book. Which is interesting.
Right.
Which is a great book, man. Have you read Camelot 3000?
I haven't. It was one that Nando actually recommended on his one of his Comic of the Days.
Ah, of course he did. Yeah, of course he did. I forgot that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was one that's just completely slipped me,
I think
like
it does
slipped
a
by
lot of
me
people. I think it
completely.
was considered to be one of the classics, you know, because it came out in that sweet spot, didn't it? That sweet spot period. And it's kind of a little bit forgotten about now. It did take a long time to come out, but then it gets Brian Bolland, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
He wrote Batman Year Two. Then he went over, he did various things, but then he went over to Malibu Comics and worked in the Ultraverse over there between 93 and 95. He wrote some issues of Maze Agency at Cameco. And then he kind of, it's kind of sad actually, because in these panels I watched him, he said he can't get hired. No one wants to hire
Really?
him, which is a shame. I think he's a good writer.
Hmm.
And I think he wrote some Star Trek novels, I think is where he went with it all, which is a real shame.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, that's kind of where well, the last place that I've seen him sort of credited was Star Trek novels of some sort. I had Batman Year Two for the longest time, and it's absolutely insane.
It's teapots and all sorts of things in it. That's
Yeah.
Alan Davis, isn't it? Am I right in saying that?
Oh, yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
I was trying to remember off the top of my head there. Yeah, that's the one that's the collected version's got Batman with a big, massive 9mm on the front.
That's right. That was where it was famous for. Yeah, I remember that now. It was a big seller.
Yeah.
Yeah, sold a lot. You know, really did do
It
well.
did, yeah. Especially on the back of Year One, you know. Year Two, fucking, let's do this.
Yeah, by the time we hit year six, yeah, you know,
Yeah, I think the next place I kind of know him from is Simpsons comics, because
Oh, really?
he's done a number of them over the years. Yeah,
Oh, I didn't
it's
know
just
that.
odd stories here and there, but he has done odd ones here and
Good
there.
on him.
Quite good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The now let's quickly sum up the story. So it's a kind of domestic terrorism thing, isn't it? So Agent Orange has gathered these. I'm guessing they're veterans, are they? Is that the idea?
Yes.
And he says, you've been treated so badly. There's echoes of today. I mean, look at the veterans in the UK sleeping on the streets with PTSD and stuff. Yep. You know, there's that. But he's actually taken advantage of them around that. So he's a bit of a shyster. We think he wears a mask because he's got a disfigured face underneath of it. Well, that's the presumption. And he's sort of rallying these ex-soldiers together to drop a... Is it some kind of bomb, is it? Is that the idea? Or to release
I think it's a whole ton of... I think it's a whole ton of Agent Orange.
Yeah.
I think he was meant to be dropping a whole ton of Agent Orange onto Gotham City to make them sort of pay for his disfigurement and what the government's done to them and whatnot. But he's the exact same as the government, you know. Yeah.
And then they eventually Batman arm masks him and he looks like Matches Malone is what he looks like.
He's got
that sort of little pencil thin moustache, isn't he?
So
the manipulation of domestic terrorism, I suppose it's kind of in the world now, isn't it? The suggestions we get of George Soros and all these sort of people, you know, manipulating the Black Lives Matter movement and stuff like that, and Antifa and the right wingers, and you know, there's that cynicism we have now behind a lot of it, don't we? I suppose.
Yeah. But there's also the thing of they learnt from Vietnam that, you know, what's the old saying that I've met the enemy and the enemy is I or something like that.
Right. Okay.
Or the enemy is we or something. It's about sort of the enemy is actually them themselves, and it's emulated with this. The true enemy was actually just them, you know.
Yeah.
They've ended up becoming their own worst enemy.
Yeah.
Even the veterans, they think that they're doing the right thing, but once he's unmasked and it's shown that they've just been conned the whole time, they're like, shit, we've just been following.
There's reflections of that here, aren't there? I mean, you've only got to think about Brexit and some of the people manipulating behind the scenes of that, really.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah.
It's just a constant political battle.
Yeah.
That I think has been summed up pretty well in, what, just a matter of 23 pages.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah. And don't forget, at this point, I think it's in year one, isn't it, that Bruce Wayne pretends to be a Vietnam vet, doesn't he? He wears that hat and goes out for a...
Yes.
Yeah.
Goes out with a disfigurement.
So it was so in the consciousness back then that these poor guys, you know, probably a lot of them were, you know, mentally ill and, you know, physically handicapped and stuff, were coming back from war. And this was this guy, this shrewd guy who's taking advantage of it, probably to bring down property prices or whatever the plan is, you know. It's an interesting one. And Mike's written something with a bit of conscience there, which I think is good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, let's talk a little bit about your impressions of the team. So I'm going to say this. I'm going to say I like teams where the characters in it don't have their own books. So I'm a lover of the Avengers, but stuff like the Avengers or the Justice League, you always kind of are aware that Iron Man or Green Lantern or, you know, whoever it's going to be has something else going on in their lives beyond what's happening on the page. And now if you take Batman out of the equation of this, which the book does eventually... you've got characters and you're living their day to day with them. You know everything that's going on in Katana or Halo or Metamorpho's life because this is where you'll see them. This is the place you visit them and nowhere else. So I kind of like that. What's your thoughts on that, dude?
I'm with you on that.
Yeah.
Definitely, Tone, because it's something that I actually said was a criticism of mine when it came to Justice League International.
Right.
Was that there was too much going on behind the scenes. There was always check this issue, check this issue, check this issue to find out what they're talking about.
Yeah.
And it just almost messes with the sort of team dynamic and story because they have to almost allude to what they've been up to in another story or a book at some point.
Yeah.
And it just, with that being tied, they can't just get on with it. They can't get on with telling the actual main story of what they're telling within the pages of The Outsiders or whatever. Yeah. If they had other titles to go off to, you know, you would have Geoforce giving it, oh, I would come and help you, but I've got something to do over in Metropolis or something. They'd be like, oh, I'll be right back.
Yeah, there would be that. And I think at its heart, for me anyway, growing up on New Teen Titans and the Uncanny X-Men and stuff, a good team book is a soap opera. So there's, you know, already we're seeing the sort of mother-daughter aunt-niece relationship between Katana and Halo. We're seeing the sort of sleazy uncle Bruce Wayne. We're seeing, you know, there's, you know, like Brion is kind of this character that, you know, he's the heroic, well, even though he's a ginger, the sort of heroic heroic character, you know, he strikes quite, you know, he's got that handsome look to him. There's something going on, yeah, that I kind of like about it, that we mentioned it a minute ago, but I read this long, long thing. I think it was on the creation of The Next Generation, and they were saying what they wanted to do. They wanted to create a father figure, even Wesley Crusher was the annoying kid brother, and you know, they create this, yes, this family thing, and you've got that immediately off the bat here with this. And Barr does something else I always find interesting, where he marries up powers with personality. So yes. Katana is, you know, there's a darkness to her, and of course part of that darkness is the fact that her dead husband is alive in her sword. You know, there's that thing. You got Halo, she's naive, she doesn't really have a background, and she's essentially a sort of fairy angelic kind of character. You've got the guy, Geoforce, who can fly. He's got extra strength, and he cuts. He's the one who would be standing next to the Markovian flag as it flaps in the wind, and you know, he'd be on the side of, drawn on the side of an aircraft or something like that. And I think that's kind of, I heard Len Wein talk about this the other day as well. He said marrying up personalities to powers is important when you're doing an iconic superhero book. And I think Barr nails it here. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, completely. 100%.
Yeah, I mean, having read on, I take it you've read on a bit on this. Is there anything that you liked about these characters that takes off from these few issues?
Not so much with Geoforce, believe it or not, even though he had a really strong start. Right. I think he just kind of, he's very lackluster as it goes on. I don't know if by the time you reach into like double digits,
yeah,
with the issues, that you might end up getting a bit more with him. But okay, it's almost like the run out of story with him. But Halo gets a really big focus throughout these books, and her sort of, like you say, her naivety.
Yeah.
And they really do play up the relationship between her and Katana a bit more as it goes, okay, on as well. And it's nice. You know, it's a good team dynamic. He gives all of them something to do, something to say, even if it's just like one of them sort of walking down the street.
Yeah.
It's, you know, there's an actual purpose to it. He writes a good bit of, yeah, dialogue for, you know, for one panel or one bubble or whatever, which sums up, okay, well, he's away doing that, we understand that. It's okay, not a case of like, oh, and I will be off page for,
yeah,
five pages now, see you later. Like, he actually gives something like, well, I'm covering the beat here, so you bugger off and go and look in and see where,
yeah,
Batman is or something like that, you know. So he really does play up the dynamics, and I think he really does play up the powers a bit more.
Right.
Some of them get left out,
okay,
a wee bit though. Even though he gives them something to do, I think unless they really bring it back around, I think Geoforce and Metamorpho really have they really have to kind of claw back, or they're going to sort of disappear into obscurity a wee bit.
Yeah, I haven't read it for years. I mean, I read it as it was coming out in issues, and I don't remember it well enough. The only thing I was thinking about it there as you were saying it, and I'm not sure if this is the Alan Davis connection, because later on Alan Davis arrives, and there's a character called Looker who turns up as well, mm-hmm, and eventually Batman leaves, and it just becomes the Outsiders. But I'm not, yeah, sure, but I would compare this to this is kind of, for me, DC's Excalibur. There was,
oh, okay.
So Halo is Megan, you know, there's a bit like that, mm-hmm, you know, Geoforce is Captain Britain. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I don't know why, it just kind of got me a bit like that. And like you say, that enclosed universe, I think is really good for, yeah, it. Cool.
The reason I said earlier on, though, and when you said that Barr really enjoys, like, he loves Batman.
Yeah.
He absolutely loves Batman. Yeah. And I agreed and said, yeah, you can see that, is because Batman gets the most attention, but not just for the story. I think he gets the most attention art-wise and everything as well.
Okay.
I think it's very much,
yeah,
I think he maybe has written, you know, here, Jim, do us a favor, do a panel of Batman and Robin with Batman in the background, or do, yeah, us a favor, and could you just do just a lot of a sort of double page of a lot of Bruce Wayne or something like that, you know.
Okay.
he just goes, there's bits where he probably didn't need to be, but it's probably been written in the margins, could you just put him in,
yeah,
there? That'd be great.
I wonder whether there's a bit of editorial on that, because he'd drawn him for so long, Aparo, hadn't he? He'd he became associated in. And I know there was a big sales point on the book when it started, was Batman shouting at the Justice League saying, "I quit." And he decides to go and live with this bunch of losers, which was a bit sudden. I wouldn't be that. I wouldn't make that decision quite so hastily if I was Batman to go and live with these weirdos. Aparo's great in this. You get exactly all you need. I mean, to me, Aparo, when I was reading comics, I always thought of Aparo as DC's Sal Buscema. Great storyteller. Nothing was like super over noodled, but they both knew what they were doing and they could tell a story.
Yeah,
you know, I kind of like very that. Awesome. And he draws each person individually. You know exactly who everyone is. There's never any doubt.
Yep.
And he's got a great Batman, hasn't he? The yellow chest symbol, the pointed ears, the shadows that he does on him. Yeah,
it's probably who I think of. Like if I'm thinking of Batman, it's kind of who I go to every time.
Okay. So what was your history with Batman, dude? Because I know if you came to this sort of reasonably recently, where were you with Batman?
I came up on the reruns of the 66.
Right.
As I called the original Batman TV show.
Yeah, that's fine.
And then from there, kind of, you know, fell into the animated TV show and then was kind of given the books. But I was given all like the trades, so I was given Year One and Dark Knight Returns and Long Halloween and all these kind of things, and given the sort of staple point ones, and then just kind of drifted off and found odd back issues here and there, Shadow of the Bat, stuff like
Ooh,
that.
That's just a much things... forgotten series, that, actually. There's some good stuff in there, actually.
Yeah, there is.
Legends of the Dark Knight actually, as well was a great series.
Yes. Yeah, do you know what? I quite liked a lot of the actual detective comic series as well. There's a lot of good sort of one and done.
A lot of good Alan Grant stuff there, man. Yeah,
very much so. I'm very partial to if there's a Batman comic that's just like a floppy that's just a one and done.
Me too. You know,
I'll read it very much so. Although I do like going along with a sort of long narrative in it. A lot of the time, it goes too long in the tooth and it could have been resolved two issues before. Especially with Batman, I think you run into that problem that he could have figured it out ages ago, and they've kind of written it that way, which they almost write themselves in a corner with it. So it's good when he has a sort of one and done. And this very much, I think, plays up to this issue three is just trying to do a one and done.
It's quite refreshing for us now that we're used to like picking up an issue of the Avengers or Black Panther and it's like number 18 in a flipping, it's refreshing to pick up a book and read it and think, I've got the whole thing there. I've got every character. Everyone has a little word in it. Everyone has a go in it. You know, it's done. And you can put that aside. And I'm more likely to go back and reread that comic than I am to go back and reread a comic that's six in a series or something, you know?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. But Jim Aparo's Batman, I think, came along more just imagery-wise for me than actual story for a lot of the time. I would see a lot of still images of Aparo's Batman, and it was always the blue and grey with the yellow that I would associate with. He popped up a couple of times. I want to say it was either Superman or Green Lantern that I was reading, and he would pop up as a bit character here and there, just sort of on a rooftop. They would sort of visit him in Gotham City or whatever, and he would pop up, and it was always Aparo's Batman. I don't know if it was necessarily actually Aparo
drawing it, but it was his
drawing
design.
Him, but it was definitely his design, 100% his design. It kind of sticks with me. If anybody ever says Batman, it comes up straight away. It's always the yellow crest and the grey and the blue, definitely.
Yeah. Oh man, if Aparo was drawing comics today and there was a magic wand and we could have one a month out of him like this, I'd love the shit out of that. You know, it'd be just great.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. 100%.
Couple more questions then. I think we've done quite well on that one. Is The Outsiders. It didn't occur to me. It just kind of... I used to see everything in iconography sort of before when I read comics, so I never thought of the Bat when I saw Batman. I never thought of the word super when I saw Superman, you know. But The Outsiders. So they are a bunch of characters, and this was the design, who are outside of the average, outside of the norm, outside of the Justice League, outside of the Teen Titans, and they were meant to be in the shadows. I know that's kind of not what they became, but something that isn't the mainstream. I think it attracted me. Is that something you're attracted to? Something that isn't maybe a little bit more street level? Maybe, I don't know.
Yeah, do you know what? It's more sort of B team.
Yeah,
I'm always a fan of the kind of B team. I mean, I love like Aquaman, Elongated Man, stuff like that.
Detroit Justice League, that one. Yeah.
I just love your kind of, as they would call them, the Z grade superheroes. I'm just kind of attracted to sort of more oddball, outside teams. So Batman and the Outsiders, straight away, it's like, oh, who's the Outsiders? What's that all about?
No, I liked it, and they have a group identity, don't they? Unlike the Justice League or the Teen Titans, there was something more, a bit like the Suicide Squad, which was kind of the same time, wasn't it? I kind of enjoyed that as well, for the similar reason that it's its own universe as well. I think part of what we were saying.
Before. I think that's why I like the. Like when we go through the GLI as well, I think that's why I kind of like the GLI as well, because it's not necessarily the main heavy hitters of the Justice League. You know what I mean? I'm more drawn to that. I do look, don't get me wrong, I'm a DC boy through and through and love the Justice League, and I'll take any of them as they come, but there just doesn't seem to be a lot of, like you said, soap opera elements a lot of the time to sort of GLA books. It's just they are all the heavy hitters and superheroes, and they need to be put to
it's Darkseid again or something. Yeah, I think it's where they make a mistake. I want to see that argument around the table. You know, I want to see a little bit of that about it. Yeah. The other thing I noticed about this issue is the Batman quotes. There's a few heavy Batman quotes in this.
There is.
I never wanted men to imitate me, only to fear me, says Batman at one point. I think that's slightly out of place. What's going on there? Yeah. But it's a great little quote. But suddenly I thought, oh, what's happened there? That's come from nowhere. And then I think he ends on a quote, doesn't he? Isn't there a big quote right at the end? My war, the Outsiders' war, will never reach an end. Thinking, come on, I've just got like a nice flat and a secret headquarters, and I want it to be a bit more fun than that. And it's like, even Halo's got this sort of duck face going on behind, apart from Metamorpho, who's got like a grin, a sort of strange white face grin. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's a strange one.
They're all really serious in that last panel.
But
even the bit before that, you know, commit acts of war against innocents who'd never hurt you in the least.
Yeah.
And as long as men rationalise injustice. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah, it's not the Outsiders I remember. Like this,
This just amped up.
Yeah.
You know, it's amped up from the page before. You know, they're having a bit of a punch up and chasing them down, and then it's like, right, get down to the hard quote. Jesus.
Yeah.
But this issue opens on quite a shocking kind of entry point.
So there's
like
a burglary and a murder, isn't there, right at the start of a security guard? Yeah.
Yeah, of like an old security guard as well, old age pensioner. You know, this is what, what's his name? Gus. Yeah, this is what Gus Baxter called the graveyard shift. And then he's shot, and it's like Gus Baxter never thought of himself as a prophet, but then he never thought of himself as
dead. And he's got like open-eyed dead man stare up at the
He looks like Jim Gordon at
he
that
does.
Point.
Yeah, he really does, doesn't he? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I'm sitting, they've just killed Jim Gordon. Fuck.
No, I mean, this is really good, man. I keep saying this every time we do this, because it always reminds me of books I haven't read for a long time. You can't read everything all the time. But to go back and read stuff like this was an inspired choice. I have to say, I messaged you yesterday? I messaged you saying great choice, or at the weekend or something. So this is really, really, really good choice. This is the sort of thing we should be doing on this podcast. I always think, you know, we can all go away and read 55 issues or something. But and as much as I've enjoyed that, Mr. Henderson, he made me do it, but it was fun. And occasionally just a little palate cleanser, I suppose they call it, don't they, of having a one and done like this is what you need in comics, isn't it? You know.
Well, that's like I say, this is why I've went back and read it over and over, because it's fun.
Yeah.
It's really good. I mean, although it's heavy in places and it's quite a heavy topic, you can blast through it. And it's so well done. And like that I don't think the action ever stops in this, even when they're actually, you know, when they're sitting in the car, there's still like movement, and they're you know, passing books to each other.
He pushes
and getting
it
underneath, in the car,
keeps pushing on
shots.
The story. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, keeps moving it forward, and it's kind of what you need. You need something that you can just kind of batter through, and you know, then go back over again and go, God, that was brilliant. I'm in love with that panel of Batman and Robin swinging in with a really dark, brooding Batman in the back, yeah, almost looking like a big, almost looking like a big building. But you know, it's just such a, it's such a nostalgic hit. This
yeah,
thing,
it is, yeah. Yeah,
like
it is
a pure nostalgic hit, and it's just great to have a proper Batman story. Yeah. But yeah, mate, it's just such a, like you said, a total palate cleanser.
Yeah, I was thinking about this the other day. I was trying to think what single issues I really enjoyed this year, and the first one that came to mind was a giant size X-Men. I think a giant size X-Men, Uncanny X-Men, Magneto or something. And that's a kind of a one and done, and I'm like, I just really enjoyed that. And as much as I love what Hickman's doing on the main title, just the one-off issue, you know, the...
Yeah.
He goes off and does something. He goes home to meet his parents and defeats the local bully, or, you know, these sort of stories that you used to see all the time. Legion of Superheroes used to do it. Occasionally they used to break the run by doing little spotlights and some of the characters. And Starboy, I think, got one, and Cosmic Boy got another one. And they're still two of my favourite characters because suddenly I was under their skin. Suddenly I got to see them, and it broke up like the 3,000 people on a page that I had to kind of work my way through. As much as sometimes that's fun, but, you know, you just need something like this, don't you? Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, you do.
Good stuff, man. Yeah. Well, we've got a quick advert, and then I'm just going to ask you a little bit about what you got on your plate at the moment, if you don't mind.
So, yeah, totally.
Just going to pause for our advert. We're back with our Twitter again, advertising with us. Very kind of them. So imagine this. You're in a multi-story car park at 2 a.m. It's dead quiet. Nobody is about. You're off to get your car after a long day at work and you're really tired, when suddenly a head pops up from behind a car and challenges you over a totally innocuous opinion you posited in 2015. Why not join Twitter? Yeah, thank you, Twitter, for that. It's good to have you on board again after last week. I think they were a bit down in the dumps last week and they couldn't see past what was going on. But yeah, they're back.
Yeah, must have just been a bit loud over at those offices. You know, it can get a bit much with people just screaming in your ears.
Yeah, just shouting at their computer screen. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good stuff, man. So I've written down three creative questions. I have three creative questions. So my first one is, what are you editing at the moment? So you are an editor along with myself. You're the busier editor at Fair Spark. And I did comment to you the other day that, dude, you got so much on. we had a little board meeting, didn't we, the other day? We ran through what titles, and I have one, and you've got about 83. So, is there any you wanted to mention that you've got on the boil at the moment? There's some great stuff coming, man.
Yeah, there is some good stuff coming. I've had a couple of updates and stuff recently from some creators. I'm not sure how much I can actually talk about yet. I know I'm working. I will say I'm working with Sam Hardiker on something that will be coming sort of.
Right.
Hopefully, so early to mid next year.
So that's we had a bit of a long eye on that one, and he's working away on it. Is Sam a man?
Yeah,
yes.
Sam's a man.
Yeah, so he's working away on that. Yeah. That's good stuff.
Yes,
are we able to say about the furry creature one? The detective.
Yeah, we can't. Well, I've not had anything through yet, but we can say that Hopper is continuing.
Yes,
definitely.
Good stuff, man. I actually genuinely think that's Hopper, our best title at Fair Spark. I think that's the best one we're doing.
I love it. Absolutely love it. I just love working on it. I appreciate Rob's work ethic and just getting on with it. But I also just love the story in general. It's just great to have a really fun. Sort of noir based anthropomorphic fun kids comic, you know. It's great. Absolutely.
And we're looking to maybe I think we're probably allowed to say this, we're looking to do a slightly longer album style book next, which is I think is right for it, I think it's good for it, I think you know,
it's where I would have liked to have gone at the start, but it wasn't something that we'd ever really discussed, and now that we're kind of at that stage where we've had a good discussion about it, and Rob seems to be very much on board for it as well. I mean, he's up for adding some extra pages and getting the book a wee bit longer. Yeah, I think it's going to be sitting nicely beside. It would sit very nicely beside sort of Asterix and Tintin and everything.
So, too,
so yeah,
Stig and Tild, Hilda, those sort of books. That's where the big bucks is, my friend. That's where. And we can't mention the cartoon deal yet, can we? Because it doesn't exist. I made it up. But one day it will. One day it will be true. Yeah.
But I do have another couple of irons in the fire, as they say, with Fair Spark as well, as we've discussed. But we do have something I'll just keep saying something, coming up with that comic smell that you
Oh,
can
okay.
have a look at. I'll just say that it's a bit of something. We're all working on something. There is a
Is it a
guest
musical
involved working on
episode?
something. Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
I bet you Sadaka's got a lovely voice.
We've all cracked open the script and song sheet for Grease, and we're going to do a
Oh,
version of
please
that.
say that Dave is Sandy. Good. Oh, so a little bit of the creative juices flowing over there. Good stuff, man. That's good. I can't
Yes,
wait to see that. Oh, you
very
know I
much
love
so.
you guys. That's going to be great. Yeah. Well, I'm seeing you next week, so I'll ply you with alcohol till you tell me. But good o. That's good stuff. Anything? So anything else going on at that comic smell? So that comic smell, the podcast that you are on. Anything? What you got? So I've just downloaded the Dark Horse episode, which I'm saving for my drive north of the border next week. So I'm looking forward to that one.
Well, that one was actually a bit shorter than
Oh, okay.
usual. We kind of just scratched the surface on Dark Horse, I think. We'd had a bit of a meeting before it, just about some other things
Yeah.
and the something that's coming, maybe in the future. You never know.
Nice.
And we just kind of we went on to Dark Horse and we kind of scratched the surface and said, you know what, that's enough. I think we can leave that there. So
Okay.
it's a nice sort of
Yeah.
45 minute episode, nothing too long. But we're just keeping at it. We've still got topics. We're still chatting. We're doing it over Skype and not in person,
It
which
won't be long
is
though. I mean, I'm
still.
hoping that it will be soonish that we'll be able to record in person
I'm
again.
hoping
Yeah.
it's yeah. I'm hoping it's soonish. We're all, to be honest, we're all desperate to see Giuseppe again because he can't get onto Skype at
Oh
all.
wow,
He's had
okay.
a
Right.
yeah. He's had a right issue trying to get on it. So we've kind of kept in touch through emails, but that's about
That's
it,
a shame.
so I haven't really seen him. So it would be good to get back in a room and
Yeah.
actually sit down
We've
with
got pretty
everybody.
awesome, and for this we've got a few guests who just don't want to do it on Skype. They just would rather meet and do it. I meant to be I'm sort of long standing had the like about every other month I have a conversation with Stephen Appleby where I want to interview him about Dragman and a couple of other things, and he keeps saying, "No, well, we'll just meet and have a coffee and have a chat." And I said, "Well, do you want to do it in Skype?" And he just, "No, I'd rather just do it, you know." So I'm like, "Sounds good to me." And to be fair, I'd rather meet these people sometimes than do it over Skype, so that's fine. Yeah.
Yeah, well, even when I was doing the sort of creator
Yeah.
conversations, I did quite a number of them over Skype, but there was one or two that I did in person because they just didn't want to do Skype as well, and I could meet them at that point.
Yeah.
Went around their house and had a cup of tea and sat down and
Yeah.
had a chat.
Yeah.
It was great. But I think there's a couple more creator conversations, maybe not necessarily from me, but we'll wait and
Oh,
see
okay.
what's coming
Interesting.
there. We'll wait and see. That's something that's rumbling at the minute. I won't say any more
Oh,
on
good
that.
stuff.
But you know what, mate? We're just keeping on at it
Yeah.
because that's all there is for it. The comics are still there. There's still a back catalogue that we
We'll
will
never read them
forever
all,
be
man.
going
We'll never, I'll
through.
never read all the comics I
Yeah.
own, never mind all the comics that exist. Yeah,
Yeah,
it's like
exactly.
that. The what else are you reading at the moment? You got anything on your read pile that you're enjoying you want to mention?
nothing really specific. I'm just kind of, I'm delving in back issue territory. Like I say, I got those Eagle Moss collections. I'm just kind of reading through them, to be
Nice.
fair. I read a couple of Dark Horse stuff in preparation for us doing Dark
Yeah.
Horse. It was sort of volume ones of stuff that were put up on their website for
Oh,
free
okay.
at the start of
Right.
lockdown and whatnot. So got on some of them, sort of Hellboy and stuff like that. I've never ever read Hellboy fully before
Oh,
until now,
nice.
so
Enjoying it?
there you go. Yes, all right, actually. Scripts meh here or there, but the art's beautiful, so I'm loving
I would
looking at
say
the art. That's
if
always
you're a
something.
team guy, a bit like me, I mean, I'm sort of fan of team comics. I think you'd like BPRD. I think it's
Yeah.
yeah. I think it's it really it has that team aspect, but it's off kilter as well. It's there are outsiders. You know, they're the you
Yeah.
know the distinction the definition of an outsider is the BPRD stuff, and some interesting artwork on that as well. It sort of jumps about a bit, but yeah, some good stuff.
Nice. But yeah, I think apart from that, do you know what? I've just really been digging through my old favourites. I've not really had a notion to read a lot of new stuff
Yeah.
recently. I will get, like, don't get me wrong, I'll get around to it eventually. I've got loads of stuff that I can be cracking on
Yeah.
with, but I just wanted some old favourites, to
Oh,
be
I know,
honest.
man.
I'm a
Yeah.
I'm a massive fan. I know a lot of people aren't, but I'm a massive fan of Alex Ross.
Right,
And
good.
do you know what? I haven't read Alex Ross in forever and actually sat and enjoyed the artwork and soaked it in.
Yeah.
So just went back and read a bit of Justice and Marvels
Marvels,
and
oh my
stuff like
God,
that.
I love it
Just,
so much. It's so,
yes, so
it
good.
made all those comics I'd read as a kid suddenly, I don't know, that it just suddenly drew them into like a reality for me. You know, Giant
Yeah.
Man stepping over the city and all this sort of thing. It's just, yeah, really good. Yeah, really good stuff.
I love his rendering of Spider-Man. It just looks
Yeah.
amazing. It is really, that really looks like a kid in a set of PJs.
Yeah.
Like it's great. I love it. But I absolutely love just drinking in his artwork. So any excuse to go back and read it really. So yeah, just been kind of fitting in, but work's been mad, so I've just been
Yeah,
kind of fitting
so I
in my
see.
spare time, you know.
I'm
So
still waiting to hear what you think of minimum wage, actually. So I'd love to hear what you think of that when you get around to that one as well, man. That's
that is literally the top
Oh,
of
good man. I think
the
you'll like
piles
it.
that are
I
next
think
to
you'll like
go.
it. His
Yeah.
new book, Bob Fingerman's new book, is out for pre-order now. I just ordered it on my comic supplier.
Nice.
Yeah, looks nuts. Yeah, good stuff.
My new reads list is literally those two trades of minimum wage, and then it's just a shitload of Jeffrey
Oh,
Brown.
nice. Okay.
I bought loads of Jeffrey Brown off of eBay. I've found loads of them for like £2, £3
Not
each.
the Star Wars stuff, the other stuff, you mean?
No, none of the Star
Good.
Wars
Yeah.
stuff. It's all the other stuff, all his early
I
works
love all
and
that.
Lucy and the Neanderthals and stuff like that. Some new
Is it
stuff
Big
as well,
Head?
but
Big
it's
Head as
none
well,
of the
is
Star
it?
Wars
Big
stuff.
Head. What's the name of that Big Head one?
Yes, yeah, Big Head. Big Head and the Transformers homage one is, God, I
Something
can't remember what
bots,
it's called, Battle
yeah, something
Bots
like
or
that. I've got it
something.
over there. Yeah, it's a shame. I met him, I chatted to him with Nick Brokenshire, actually. We had a coffee with him, and
Oh, nice.
I felt like saying, please stop doing the Star Wars stuff. I know it makes you probably bought your
Yeah.
house off the back of it. Can we just go back to you being a bit neurotic with a girl you've just met or something? You know, that's what I want,
He has done those Neanderthal
right?
books, which are
Oh,
quite
okay, I've
good.
not read
So
them, yeah.
I've enjoyed bits of them. Mike turned me on to them as
Oh, okay.
well. So they're really good, and they're sort of, he's putting them out just now. It's sort of around the same time as the Star Wars stuff. So he is doing other stuff, but yeah, I would like to get some more diary
Yeah,
stuff. I
yeah.
would like to see stuff we, even if he did some more diary stuff with his kids or whatever, with them getting a bit
Yeah,
older
yeah,
or something. I think it'd be
yeah.
pretty
Yeah,
good.
as long as it's not a cat getting
But
out of a
yeah.
bag or whatever that fucking thing was, but there you
No, that's the definitive
go.
one. You can just do that. No other ones. That's it.
Good old mate. Thanks for coming on. Hopefully you'll be back, so we'll have to think of another one to talk about. It's quite
Yes.
nice actually. I've got this like little group of people now. The odd one, the odd person sort of jumps up at me. Ken Reynolds is coming on to talk about something next month and stuff. But
Oh, brilliant.
there's a sort of little core group of people. 90% of them are Scottish, who come on and
Yeah, I was going to
yeah, one of
say.
them's texting me now, Mr. Cannon. I can see it going off.
Oh,
The
jeez.
so yeah, it's good. It's good. I mean, really enjoying it, man. It's we've scaled back the I don't do 5 a week now, so it's quite nice. But
No, well, you've got slightly busier
yeah, I
now,
know.
so I
Yeah.
think so. But it's been really
Oh,
good,
thanks,
Tony.
man.
You've done a
That's
great
very
thing with
kind of you.
these. You have done
Cheers.
a great
Just
thing
to amuse
with
myself, as you understand.
these.
Where can people find you, man?
Mainly on the sort of podcast, Twitter and Instagram at That Comic
Nice.
Smell. And just Google That Comic Smell, and it comes up with every podcast catcher that we're on and whatnot, and socials and all that kind of jazz. That's your main place. I am on a personal thing on Twitter, but I can't be bothered using it, to be honest.
I know
So,
the feeling.
you know,
Yeah,
just
yeah,
yeah, just come and find me at the podcast. Come on, interact with the podcast. Come and listen to it. You'll be good old with that.
Good
That's
stuff,
fine.
man.
And buy some Fair Spark
Yeah,
books, put
exactly. Buy
it
some Fair Spark books. That's good. Find Fair Spark on
that
Twitter or wherever they are. Is it? And the Spark is obviously you can find that on
Yeah.
Instagram as well. There's an ongoing little strip going on there. Charles Raymond's drawing it at the moment. It's very good. You can find my books if you're prepared to read something that is like highly violent and highly sexual at Tribute Press. Bigcartel.com. Nobody's caught up with us yet. We're still going. Adam's drawing issue 3 as we speak, actually. So
Oh,
we're
nice.
having an absolute blast of that. I'll tell you about a little incident in that in a minute. Thanks, man. Yeah, lovely to see you again. And I'll see you soon.
Thank you, buddy. See you soon.